Film Nerds Unlimited. Lo-fi movie conversations with high-quality movie connoisseurs. Craig Hamilton of CitizenCraig.com. Ben Stark of Wondermill Films.
Hello, Craig.
Hello.
Today we're talking about Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince, the sixth movie in the Harry Potter series, one of the best ones. I'll just go ahead and say it off the top. We'll also say that we're going to be spoiling this movie a little bit. Last time I was a little bit off the Harry Potter bandwagon. Whenever Order of the Phoenix came out in 2007, in 2009 when Half-Blood Prince came out, I couldn't remember anything that happened in the last movie, but I was ready to give the movie a shot. I was ready to kind of get back on board because I saw that the final stretch was coming up. So I went in with an open mind and ended up really loving the movie more than most anybody I talked to at the time. I remember thinking, like, wow, why is nobody talking about how fantastic this movie is from a number of different perspectives? But just as a big budget blockbuster movie that has so much going on in it, I thought was so impressive, and really it's pretty impressive about all of these Harry Potter movies. But so yeah, I was really happy about this, and it put me in a good place going forward as we rounded out the series. Where were you in 2009, and how did this movie hit you when it came out?
Yeah, so let me see. I think I saw a time hop recently that suggested I may not have been as keen on it after I saw it the first time, which goes against my memory. So it must have been an alternative reality.
Right, that reality is separate, yes.
Right, so but I do remember, because I went to see it, like, twice in just a number of days. But I do remember liking it, at least after that second time, and I remember liking it after the first one, too. But if there was any qualms after the first viewing, that has to do with my expectations due to being an avid reader. But I remember seeing it with my wife and my in-law the second time, and I was able to sit back and watch it without any kind of anxiety. And I loved it. I mean, what stands out to me most about it, you know, if putting aside any sort of, does it tell the story as it should? I think the cinematography is just, it's insane. And the art direction as well. It's one of the better films to sort of showcase that, just the ability to create really great shots along with, being a good storytelling device.
Yeah, this is definitely Yates settling in to the style that you would that would kind of mark his contribution to the series. And I agree, it's a really great looking movie, and he does a fantastic job pulling all those elements together. Obviously, those individual artists do fantastic work here. I think what I love, kind of one of the easy ways to explain what I love about this movie is that the overarching plot is so strong that they're able to use that as a framework for a bunch of really entertaining little episodic bits. So you've got this strong, overwhelming plot, which is basically a spy story, and that's what struck me from the beginning as something that was really exciting and fun. It's these two opposing sides basically having a Cold War, this Cold War happening between Dumbledore and Voldemort, and their agents are these kids in this school trying to figure out new information, trying to subvert the other side, and eventually trying to get to the other side and kill the other side. It's a really great setup and a really great tension that is woven throughout the movie very simply with just shots of Malfoy sulking here and there. You get the idea that he's on this mission that's going to come to the surface eventually, and it's tearing him apart. And it's a really great way to keep that overarching plot going, but you still have these moments in the film of them having butterbeer together and them accidentally getting love potion and all these other things. So I feel like it's this great overall very tense, very dramatic, very dark plot, but it still has a lot of the charm of the earlier movies or just life in a school in general.
Right.
It kind of goes for what Newell was going for in the fourth film, but with more grace and more sincerity and more charm from the cast. It's really, there. I don't know why, but it's kind of one of the more endearing moments of the whole movie is after they go to, I forget what the name of the pub is, but they go there and Hermione, like, half drunkenly puts her arms around Ron and Harry. And it's just fun. It's just fun. It's just funny and fun, and these people are so comfortable with one another. And this is, the movie has a little bit of everything. You know, it has that childish charm, but then it also has these world-ending stakes that are set up from the beginning.
Yeah, and it's, you're exactly right. That's a good point, and I think Yates is able to do that by using little scenes from the book. I think Newell tried to create this atmosphere that did not exist, and Yates was able to achieve that, those moments, and if you have several enough of those moments that work, it gives you the feeling that it's sort of all the time. While Hermione didn't have to drunkenly throw her arms around Ron and Harry, that I can remember from the books, that little moment works in an existing moment from a book. For instance, like the Slughorn, the Slug Club, little dinner. Like, those were in the book, and, you know, you use one of those in the movie. You know, you could write it all out if you wanted to and just focus on the story. Or you could say, hey, you know, because these things are happening, as you said, while the serious stuff is going on. But the whole while, Dumbledore is sort of this whole series sitting back and just sort of nudging Harry and nudging other important people along or towards each other so that this plan can come to fruition.
Right.
He's sort of manipulating is a really harsh word to say, I think, but he sort of is, but he's sort of letting
sure.
it evolve on its own, whereas Voldemort is forcing Draco to do something. But these little moments like this, like, you know, Harry knew Slughorn would come back if Harry was there, so that Slughorn could bring him in his Slug Club, and, you know, because he loved kids of famous people or with kids with connections, and this whole while, Dumbledore was hoping Harry would get the memory from Slughorn because he knew he'd be able to convince him in the long run. So those little moments like that have the reasons for being in there, but it's a good way to use that to create atmosphere of, you know, we're still at school, everything can be, there's some pretty funny moments in this movie, and it is one of the darkest movies as far as what's happening in it.
Yeah, I mean, it ends with probably the series' biggest death in Dumbledore, and where Yates kind of softened the blow on Sirius Black last time. This time I feel like it's a really great and well-constructed cinematic moment. You know, the death of Dumbledore.
Yes.
I mean, obviously, the next movie I feel like goes to the darkest places of the series and just stays there the entire time.
Yeah, I remember reading that book and being, I think I read it most of it today, but I was nauseous. And that wasn't just because I drank, like, three monster drinks and, like, took a couple of Yellow Jackets. It was like, I was just kind of like, I don't like this.
Yeah, it's rough.
But anyways, that's the next book. That's not what we're talking about now. But.
Right, who cares about that right now?
Yeah.
But yeah, this doesn't have that. This has the overarching sense of dread, but it also has those little funny moments. I mean, probably the funniest moment of the whole series is Harry's luck potion, and just the way Radcliffe plays all of that. It's just great.
The Felix Felicis, I believe, is what that is, and that moment in the movie went over so well, if I remember correctly. And in the book, it's sort of like Harry's just taken a bunch of Adderall, knows exactly what he needs to do, and just has this gut instinct feeling about doing odd, like, senseless things to bring it about, and it works. And it's like, you know, there's the warning of the love potion is that, you know, there's these huge consequences as they are with the luck potion, but it's really something that you've heard about the whole book. He finally takes it, and wow, it actually does, it actually is doing what it said. I mean, everything's going so well. But in the movie, he kind of just, kind of like, lopes around, and it's sort of just like, you know, hi, how's it going? Oh, hey, Professor, I see you doing something that's totally illegal and definitely against the rules and unethical. And but the way he talks back to him is so funny. It's just kind of like,
yeah,
Harry, I can't be, you know, the audacity of you being out after hours. He's like, sir, what? You know, like, you know, please come along. And
And that's another little moment that I feel like is a good summing up of the whole movie. That's all played out, or most of that is played out in one shot. It starts with this wide shot of Slughorn, like, peering through the window, and then Radcliffe comes in the background, like, right in the perfect mark, and, like, comes towards the kid. It's just, like, it's just, with Yates is just really on the top of his game in terms of pacing and blocking everything out and just letting it play out. This is also, I feel like, the first movie that really, I mean, I guess we had a flash of it last time, but the first movie that really allows Snape to be the conflicted, complicated character that he will end up being. And I don't know, I never read the book, so I remember thinking, like, it was so clear to me after he kills Dumbledore that there's so much more there, and I can't put my finger on it, you know, what that is, if that's just the way that Rickman played it, or if there's some other, or if it was just the fact that they had conversations about it before. There's just something in it that it just very, very deftly positions the audience to say, okay, I see where Harry's coming from, and I'm also angry. However, I'm not willing to write off Snape as a total Death Eater at this point. Is it that nebulous in the book and kind of hard to thread?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's as you said, in the movie, he's conflicted. There are shots of him, if I remember correctly, that I know there are shots in the next one, early in the next one, but in this one, I feel like when he comes to Harry underneath the floor of that astronomy tower right before Dumbledore's killed, he kind of gives Harry this kind of assurance that, you know, without saying anything, hey, I'm here, just be quiet. He could be trying to trick Harry. I think there are moments though that lack a real sinister air about Snape throughout the movie. That if they were there, if he were more sinister, you would say, oh, this definitely.
Yeah.
He's definitely bad. Or at the end when he just blocks Harry's spells. He doesn't. I think he gets him once on something, but he totally lets him be. And while, of course, while he's saying, you know, he belongs to Voldemort, we can't touch him. But there's this, and by the, most of the people watching the movie had already known what was going on. But in the book, I think the movie gives you, it presents itself in a way to where you're like, no, there's got to be more to this. But in the book, I remember it lacked any of that. It made you feel like it was completely Snape, because Snape gets it, and right before Snape kills Dumbledore, there's this line, something about he has this, I forget the word, but it's like there's this incredulous look on his face of, it gives you the mental image of Snape looking at Dumbledore in pure disgust and then hits him with the killing spell. But immediately, like, the internet was, while the Harry Potter book series was going on, of course, it had been a few years, the internet was really coming to age at the same time, so it's a very interesting, there's a book about it called Harry, A History. It talks about as the fandom grows and the people of the fandom grow and mature, the internet actually evolving into this area to where they can all meet and discuss and stuff like that, and it was really kind of an interesting book, but immediately there were theories, nope, This is he's a double agent. This is why, and they're very convincing theories online of, and in the media, I was like, yeah, there's definitely more to this. And there's no clues of, there are clues of Harry's mom and Snape, but not nearly as, just enough to kind of push that theory along. So in the book, it was, you know, on the surface, it was, no, there was not a ton of hints or clues to suggest that this was as, you know, easy to explain as it is in the movie.
This overall, this is, I feel, a real quick sidebar. Have you seen the YouTube video from whenever the book of this movie came out? I guess it would have been 2007. It's basically these two guys driving.
Wait, hold
through
on. 2005.
2005 is when Half-Blood Prince came out?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so it's it's early in the days of YouTube. And two guys drive through a Barnes & Noble book parking lot right at midnight as people are buying the first copies of this book, and they just scream out, "Snape kills Dumbledore!"
Oh, that's awful. That's awful. I remember I was working on campus, and there was some of these forums had somebody had posted a page, like the page of when that happened. And it was one of those things where, you know, when you open something and you know it,
you see
bad,
it. Yep. Yeah.
And I kind of saw, I think I saw someone, maybe they posted the page after it happened of Harry telling somebody what had happened. I think that's what it was. But it completely erased it from my mind, because when I read it in the book, it took me by surprise. I was completely shocked. I think I'd known enough from what I saw of that page, which was like Harry saying he did it or something, and I was like, oh no. And
yeah.
I completely clicked out, completely put it out of my mind and forgot about it.
Yeah.
And there was all, this book was
nice.
More than any others had spoiler, like, it was like an aggressive offensive against readers to spoil them. It was like, what the heck?
I don't understand. I don't understand. Yeah, I don't understand that instinct at all. But because I'm detached enough from the fandom, I can't see humor in that situation.
You know,
it's so infuriating.
I guess if it's keeping these kids, you know, out of the woods torturing animals, I guess that's okay.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
But I think the internet has given, you know, psychopaths something else to do with their time, and it's just sort of affecting everyone differently.
Absolutely. But this is the movie where I there were definitely hints of it before, but this is the movie where I was so in, and I was so flabbergasted at the top, J.K. Rowling's ability to so expertly plot this stuff out, you know, and just like every one of these stories is totally justifiably its own thing and its own story. However, they're all planting seeds that, you know, will grow into bigger things later. And this is where it was like, man, we are truly in the hands of an expert storyteller, especially on like a big scale, you know, in terms of plotting this story out over the life, basically, of Harry Potter and a little bit before, is staggering. And, I feel like this is the movie where, as a movie series, it was like, okay, yeah, this is going to be, even if they don't stick the landing, like the fact that they've gotten this far and it's this unified and it's this consistent with these performances, it was the moment where I was like, wow, we're in the middle of a huge achievement here. When did you have that feeling in the books? Was it kind of from the get-go?
Yeah.
Or
good question. So, you know, the first one, obviously, I actually read the first one after I read the fifth one. I saw the first movie and immediately went to the second book, because I think the first movie does a really great job of, you know, doing all that at the first
catching
movie.
Up to speed. Right.
Yeah. The second book, you know, it's with a journal, okay, the diary, which has a huge connection to the sixth book. And,
right.
And they don't really mention it again until the sixth book. And in fact, Ginny Weasley brings it up in connection to the Half-Blood Prince's potion book, which is just writing in a book, not being possessed by a soul. convincing you to do things. And she said, listen, I did what writings in a book told me to do once, and it almost killed me. And that's an immediate connection to what that was in Chamber of Secrets, the second book. And that was a horcrux. And that didn't pay off till 4 books later. And
then, they should have brought that up in the movie. Why didn't they have her say that in the movie? That's crazy.
She takes him to the room of requirement, and I can't remember the dialogue that's had there, but...
I like that she is I like that she is the agent that helps him kind of figure that out, but I feel like have been such an easy way to explain her motivation there other than just wanting to have time with Harry.
Yeah, in a secret room.
Right.
But as far as the books go, I think it really hit me maybe because, you know, in the second book it says, you know, this kid comes out of the diary and says, hey, I'm Tom Riddle. And I'm like, who the heck is Tom Riddle? And then you shuffle the letters around and it's like, you know, I'm Lord Voldemort, and it's the same letters. And then I'm kind of like, okay, but I don't know what Tom Riddle is. So I just put that in the back of my mind. And that reading Prisoner of Azkaban, more of that stuff kind of connected. And I think that probably was it for me. But really when the Goblet of Fire book opens with the death with Voldemort in that weird infant state at the Riddle house, and you're thinking, oh, wait, at the Riddle house. Then it begins to get confusing, and then you understand towards the end, oh, Tom Riddle really was this kid at school that everybody knew, and there's more to this story, and he actually did these things to himself to become who he is. He made himself look incredibly weird and all this weird stuff. So I think it was like the third and especially the fourth where I was like, wow, this is like hugely connected. And of course the sixth really begins to, sixth is a foundation of, okay, all these things are connected. Here's why and here's how it's going to affect the rest of the series.
Yeah. And I mean, I think it goes to show that, you know, we were able to talk about so much stuff in this you know, it took us this long to bring up the romance subplot, which there are several in this movie. And I think they're all played out really well. Again, I feel like this is kind of, in some ways, this is a redo of the fourth movie, you know, where they're kind of getting into the interpersonal, they're getting into dating, they're getting into the love triangle stuff. And that's what, it's pulled off so much better this time around. And I mean, I'm sure a lot of it has to do with the actors being a little bit older, understanding these things a little bit better. But I think it also has a lot to do with Yates and the relationship that he built in the fifth movie.
Yeah, I never thought of it like that, but that's a good point.
And then lastly, I'll just say that Jim Broadbent in general is great in this movie. And I feel like he is a good picture of what makes this movie one of the best. And that's this kind of goofy, like old-fashioned British comedy veneer, you know, with this darkness and real tragedy and regret underneath, you know.
Yep.
I feel like he's a great actor and he toes that line so well, and it's just, I don't know, I feel like the character of Slughorn is such a good picture of this movie in general, in terms of the different tones and the crafty way that they're tied together.
I think Robin's great in that role. It's just exactly like you said. He kind of brings that, the, you know, shame of his past. You know, he gets a sense that he's under this heavy weight of guilt but he's, you know, a great teacher, and he is friends with Dumbledore, and he's this idea that really Dumbledore only brought him along so that he could get the memory from him. I think Broadbent does a really great job of playing someone who's out for himself, but a good person. It's kind of like what I said about the world isn't split up between good people and Death Eaters, and Slughorn is one of those. He was in Slytherin, he's the head of Slytherin House, and you can tell by when they go to find him, he's really there to save himself, and it takes a lot of convincing to go to a school to teach to help protect those kids. But yeah, Robin does such a great job of channeling all that and also being really lighthearted and humorous at times. Also, hey, what did you think of, did you sense any, like the way it was shot, like in the open, like outside shots, did it have a lot of, and I don't know the technical terms, but did it have a lot of like blurred backgrounds for you, or did it feel like the background was foggy or something?
Not really. No, I mean, okay. I mean, but yeah, I mean, it's definitely, Yates plays with both, you know, with wide angle stuff and then very shallow focus stuff too. So I'm sure there's something in intentional there that I didn't catch.
Yeah, it's like a lot. It feels like Order of the Phoenix was very crisp, and Half-Blood Prince to me felt really, not blurred, like you couldn't tell what was going on, but just maybe it was just the greenness or the earth toniness of the whole thing was different. I feel like Order of the Phoenix felt really black and blue. But anyway.
Yeah, there's definitely, I mean, he does crazy things with color. I mean, whenever they're in the cave, I feel like there's like zero color in the movie at all.
Yeah.
It all kind of comes to light whenever Dumbledore sets it on fire.
And that's good. That's, I think that's mentioned in the book where it was like, you can't tell what's the surface of something and what's just, you know, air.
Yeah.
So what did you think about, and just wrapping up, if I have any qualms with it at all. And there's not much. But I'm trying to figure out the point of bringing the Death Eaters through the Vanishing Cabinet. Because there definitely was a reason for that in the book. And I feel like in the movie, it's a slight change in one thing that sort of takes the whole point of that away.
Well, I read it as there's no other way for them to get in. And they need to be there to support Malfoy and to,
support.
You know.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't
mean,
know.
That's what I keep going back to. And I feel like that's a legit reason. In the book, there's this huge battle that takes place inside the school. The Order shows up and all those Death Eaters, it's like a huge, and you're sure somebody's about to die. And that happens after Dumbledore has already died. So it's
interesting. Yeah, I feel like that would have been similar to the last movie that was kind of an issue, you know, where you have this big moment and then you still have to fight the bad guys, you know. So I feel like the fact that it's so much sadder, you know, that it almost feels like the place is empty now, you know, and it's just Harry chasing after them, trying to get them, but he can't because they're going too fast. They're focused and Snape is holding him back. So I feel like it's a lot more effective this way.
Something Rowling also does very well is in the books, there's a character that has an idea in his or her head, or the trio have an idea in their head, and they're going right along with it the whole book, but they're wrong. But they have a good reason to think something. And Harry, the whole time, and in the movie too, is convinced Malfoy is a Death Eater. He's convinced. And this time, Ron nor Hermione believe him, and they actively tell him he's wrong and he needs to give it up. And it's just validation for once that Harry is completely correct the whole time, but at the end it doesn't matter because what has happened, you know?
Yeah, I don't think he's totally correct. I think that's one thing I love about the movie is that he assumes that Malfoy is basically just as bad as Voldemort. And has that capability. But what we're seeing, which is Malfoy's side of, this is killing him, this is tearing him apart, and he isn't the evil monster that Voldemort is, and he doesn't have that capacity. He's just too weak. He's too weak to go through with it.
But Harry tells Ron and Hermione afterwards, I don't think he would have killed Dumbledore. I think he thinks he's the agent that is actively working against them, and he's correct about that,
But I think that's a realization that happens in the moment. I don't think Harry thought that way the whole movie, he wouldn't have tried to ice him like he basically does.
He does the whole book.
Okay.
He definitely does the whole book, but he follows him in. He follows it. Doesn't he follow him around? He follows him in the bathroom.
Sure. Yeah.
And guts him. That shot reminded me of the opening of Order of the Phoenix, that little scene. It was very, like an undramatic fight scene, which makes it more realistic to me. It was very much like people scuffling, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it was ugly. It was two people that aren't at the top of their game just trying to desperately survive, which I think also plays to the ugliness of it. You know, it's Harry kind of allowing himself to get to the vengeful part of himself that none of us really want to see. So I think that the way that it's presented is suitably ugly.
And he's using a spell of which he knows nothing of, and it's actually dark magic.
Right.
And so Harry's actually, you know, doing dark magic. He doesn't know it, but that's the danger of doing something somebody's written. It's such a shadow of the second book, but in a totally different way. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, in general, I think how you described the Voldemort-Dumbledore dynamic earlier is a really great – it's something I hadn't thought of, and it's a really great way to look at it, which is that they're both using, you know, these kids to achieve their ends, but Dumbledore does it through trust, through suggestion, and through suggestion, and then trusting – Harry to do things his own way and come to his own conclusions, spurred on by Dumbledore's suggestions, whereas Malfoy is told to do something, basically forced into doing it, and then still backed up by the goons, you know. So it's like Voldemort really never even trusted him to do the right thing, or else he wouldn't have sent them to follow up.
Right, he's only doing that to Draco to punish his dad, Lucius Malfoy.
Yeah, yeah.
That's why he's doing it, basically.
Yeah. Well, this is a good one, and they're all good ones from here on out, I think. Looking forward to talking to you next time as we begin the end.
Film Nerds Unlimited, go to filmnerds.com or find us on Facebook and Twitter. If you like what you hear, rate and review our podcast on iTunes. Keep an eye out for the next issue of Film Nerds Unlimited, coming soon.
Today we're talking about Harry I almost said Harry Blutter. Okay.
Harry Potter and the Fountain of Gold.